I'm living loved by God. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food and work. And I've had severe control issues, and my wife would tell you I still struggle with them from time to time. She says, you never understate like that. You always overstate. But, I have control issues. There you go. My sister will tell you. I've had issues with pornography and with alcohol and with rage and depression and panic. So that's me. I'm a mess. Have they had the first meeting yet? You all haven't had the first meeting, right, Harold? Tomorrow night, the welcome. 6 to 8 here in the church, in the Welcome Center. Okay, cool. So Winter's Dark Night is what we're talking about. We had the first lesson in the workbook last week. This is the second lesson. And this kind of helps you to be oriented to what they do on Monday night. So it's going to be at 6 o'clock if you struggle with what? Do what? Good question. Okay. So if you struggle with wintertime depression, and I always have, and a lot of people do, if you struggle with wintertime depression, this is a good group. It's going to be 4 sessions. It'll last through January. And then in February, we'll start our normal pathway midweek groups, which will be on Thursday night. And we'll have several groups that'll start then. So, and I've been missing that. Some of my brothers are here. I've been missing meeting with y'all. Those are good sessions. So anyway, so this is the second lesson in that Winter's Dark Night, and it's about isolation and loneliness. And on the way home last Sunday night, I told Robbie, I said, you know, I've been reading the lesson. I said, that's not working, is it? And she said, no, that's not working. So I'm not going to read the lesson this time. I'm just going to plunge right in. Why would I want to avoid people? I mean, that's isolation, and that's people avoidance. Is isolation. So I'm just going to ask the question. I've got a list, and then I want to see if you've got some more to add to the list. But why would I want to avoid people? I see them as a threat, some sort of a threat to me. I find them very boring. They're too needy. They're controlling. Number 5 is I find them to be prejudiced. Don't appreciate that. Number 6, they're all about themselves. Just constantly all about themselves. They're so blamed ignorant. Sorry, I did overstate that a little bit. They don't meet my needs. They're too nosy, too imposing, they interrogate me. They're just an inconvenience. They're so dramatic. They create, when I'm with them, it's an awkward situation. Feels awkward, clumsy. Keep going. What else? Why do I want to avoid people? Talk too much. They don't listen. Remind me of somebody that hurt me.
You're ashamed of yourself.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I need somebody else. Somebody else? Well, I don't want to avoid people. Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. All right. All right. They're posing. Yeah. Okay. So here's my second list. And getting away from people helps me. How? I mean, that's what I want to tell myself. If I'm going to justify, God put me here on this earth with other people. Obviously, it took 2 people to get me here, right? They had to have some sort of fellowship, if you know what I mean. And I was raised in a family with other people. Fellowship. I was raised in a family with other people. And my whole life I've lived with people. But yet, I imagine that if I can get away from people, it's going to be a good thing for me, especially this time of year. Now, when you're depressed, you don't necessarily sit down and calculate this out, because depression is not calculated. Depression is, you just feel it. You feel dark and dreary. But if somebody asks you and you don't want to tell them the truth, you know, why are you staying to yourself? I don't want to admit I'm depressed, so why do we lately? We got to come up with something myself so I can focus. I need to get away so I can just be myself. I feel like I have to be somebody different when I'm out with other people. So I want to be alone so I can just be myself. So I can relax, so I can accomplish my goals. Naomi said, you know, people take so much time. I can't get anything done, you know. So I need to be by myself so I can accomplish my goals. So I can feel safe. I feel safe when I'm by myself in my own little fortress. So I can feel good about myself. When I'm around other people, I feel bad about myself. So I stay to myself so I can feel good about myself. And Dr. Phil would ask, how's that working for you? And we would all collectively say, it really doesn't. It doesn't. But these are the things we tell ourselves. You know, if we don't want to admit to ourselves that we're depressed or that we're blue or we're down, we've got to explain to ourselves some way that we have legitimate reasons for isolating. And you know what? Sometimes, okay, time out. Sometimes you need to get away. That's not what we're talking about tonight. Sometimes you need to, I need to go to the woods from time to time. I just need to go to the woods and be alone. You want to confess what you did this morning? So she went to another church by herself. And I thought, wow, that, you know, those kind of times, that's not what we're talking about here. That's not people avoidance. That is self-care. There's a difference between self-care and isolation. There's a big difference between the two. So we need to really get that in our minds. But this time of year, people tend to, more so than other times of year, we don't get alone to do self-care. We get alone because we just want to isolate. It's too painful for one reason or another to be with other people. It's too painful to us. It's too complicated. It's too raw. It's too probative. They're going to ask me why I'm not smiling like I usually do. They're going to ask me why I'm not cracking jokes like I usually do. It's going to get awkward. So I'm going to just stay by myself. And here's the thing. Okay, so here's where I stop talking about all of us collectively, and I'm just going to talk about me. Because it's not fair to assume that you respond to isolation the same way I do. That's not fair to do. So this is where I go when I isolate. And you may identify, you may not. When I isolate, the first thing I do is I start believing my own lies. I'm the only voice in the room, so I'm the only voice I hear, and so I'm the only voice I believe. And after a while, it starts going south, and I start spinning yarns and spinning tales in my imagination, and my people don't like me anymore. People have found out about this or that. I know people are talking about me. I know so-and-so's feelings toward me have changed. You know, and you start believing imaginations. You start believing all kinds of things. Why haven't they called me for 2 weeks? Why? Yeah, I know. They're rejecting me like everybody else. And we had a collective insight on the way here tonight. God gives me grace for everything I face. If I get the diagnosis of cancer, God gives me the grace that moment. If I lose somebody, God gives me the grace at that moment. If there's a failure, if there's a disappointment, if some kind of negative reality hits me in life, God gives me grace for that. But does God give me grace for my whacked out imagination? I started thinking about that. Really? So I can dream up all kinds of horrid, terrible things in my isolation. My mind goes crazy and I imagine these catastrophic things. I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to lose my home. I'm going to, you know, these catastrophic things we start to imagine. They're going to find out this about me, or they're going to say that about me, or they're going to be disappointed in the way I'm doing this. And it just gets, it's just this snowball that gets bigger. Has anybody ever, this catastrophic thinking that gets worse and worse and worse and worse, and then we expect God to somehow just some magic and make this imagination magically go away. And I'm not so sure he does that. I think he would like to sit down and talk to us about that and say, how in the world did you get here? How did you get this to this place? Can we talk about that? Or I think God would like to send a friend or a mentor or somebody to us to ask us, tell me how you got from point A to point B in your mind. How did you do this? How did you spin this in your mind to make this go from this to this? You know, all of a sudden it's life-threatening. So that's the first thing that happens to me when I isolate. I start believing my own lies. The second thing that happens when I'm isolated is I really start to feel inconsequential. I begin to feel worthless. I begin to feel like I don't count. There's no purpose to my life. I'm not doing anybody any good. I'm not good to anybody. I get this feeling of it really doesn't matter whether I'm here or not. I'm not here lately, but it used to be when I went here, I would even get suicidal in my thinking. To think if I'm just worthless, if I'm just a waste of space and air, maybe it'd be better if I just wasn't here. And, you know, before my first child was born, I literally had the oak tree picked out. I was going to wrap my little Dodge Aries around on Nicholasville Road between Nicholasville and Lexington. It's like, I've had it. I just can't take this anymore. Thankfully, I didn't do that. But so when I isolate, you've got that of absolute and utter worthlessness. And people can, you know, people close to you, your spouse, whatever, can tell you straight up, you're not worthless. You mean the world to me, and you don't hear it. It goes in one ear and out the other. It's like they might as well just be farting in the air because I don't hear what you're saying. So I don't know if that's where you go, but when I isolate, that's where I go. I start believing my own lies, and I start feeling smaller than that, just insignificant. And then, this is weird how this can happen, but in me, when I isolate, I literally become the only person in my world. I'm a very small person. I'm a very worthless person, but I'm the only person in my world. You're bleeding out, you're dying, you're hurting. That's okay, but you don't feel like I do, you know. But my family's falling apart. Yeah, I know your families are falling apart, but you don't. There's no way you. It's bad as what I've got, and I literally nobody else's problems matter anymore. Nobody else's issues, thoughts, opinions, lives, none of it matters anymore. The only thing that matters is me. Because I'm the only person in my world. You know, everywhere I turn, there I am. Your world gets very small. It's all about self-pity. Nobody's got it as hard as I have it. Nobody tries as hard as me and fails as more as I do. No, you know, it's just, it gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And I had a good conversation, a very short one with Harold the other night. But he came up with a phrase that's just like, really? I mean, it's perfect. I don't think you thought it up. I think you heard it from somebody. But he said from one of his recovery groups he was in a long time ago, he said, if you spot it, you got it. Have you ever heard of that? So all these reasons why I want to stay away from people, all these bad things I see in them, and all that I consider to be legitimate reasons, these are legitimate reasons why I'm avoiding people right now. These are I ought to put huge air quotes, legitimate reasons why I'm isolating, why I'm staying to myself. It's because that person's like that and that person's like that and they don't care and they want to hurt me and they're backstabbing, blah, 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 you know. And really what happens is you're spotting. Stop and think about that. The things that bother us the most about other people are in us. That's a hard pill to swallow. But the things that bother you the most in other people, go look in the mirror, and that's what bothers you about yourself the most. I hate that. I hate it because it's true. So, think, I don't know, I heard Wayne preach this twice this morning, and then we listened to a recording of Pastor Adam preaching here. And it seemed like there was a theme that followed all the sermons that were preached on all the campuses at Broadway. And that is, there's something to be said for simply showing up. There's something to be said for that. I'm not in the mood to show up. I don't feel like, I don't like everybody who's there. So-and-so might sit next to me. So-and-so is going to get up and say what they always say, and I'm tired of hearing it. You know, we're going to sing that same old song we've done. 1,000 reasons, but we show up anyway. There's something to be said about saying, I feel like isolating. I feel like going and sitting on a hill. Oh, no, I didn't mean to say that. No, you needed to do that. I can pick on my sister. I can pick on my sister. There's something to be said about in the month of January, and some in mine last into February and a little bit into March, but there's something to be said for, I want to sit in my little cave and pout, but I'm not going to. I don't feel like going with people. I don't feel like going to Pathway. I don't feel like going to church. There are nights, I'm just being honest with you, we're driving down the hill here, and I say to Robbie, Pathway's the last. But there are just times when I just think, I don't want to go. I don't want the responsibility. I don't want to lead it. I don't want to do it. There's rarely, rarely a time when we drive back up the hill, and I think, I hated that. Maybe in the 13 years we've had this, there have been 2 or 3 times when I left thinking, man, that was like a good sharp poke in the eye. You know? Almost every time, no matter how droll and bad it is coming down the hill, when you go back up the hill, it's like, dadgum, I'm glad we went. Wow, that was just, you know. Like last week, what did we have? We had just a very few people in here. Whoa, what a time we had. I mean, it just fed my soul. I'm so glad I didn't stay home. I'm so glad I came here and was fed. So is community really worth the risk? I want to just say 3 things, and then we'll close. This is all I have tonight. You know, is community worth the risk or not? And you never really know until you try. You can't read a book and be convinced. You can't sit at home and toss a coin and say, you know, heads it is, tails it's not. You can't do that. The only way you can know whether community is worth the risk or not is to get into it. It's the only way. You have to say, okay, I'm going to put my clothes on and I'm going to go. You know, they're not my best clothes and this is not my best face. And this is not my best mood, but I'm just going to go. The way I am, I'm going to go, and I'm going to take the risk. And so I, this week when I was preparing for this, 3 things came to my mind, and I don't know if they mean anything to you. Sometimes when I'm sitting at my desk and I'm writing these things, I'll just break down and weep because I think, wow, that hits me. That ministers to me. That says something to my spirit. That doesn't mean it's going to say anything to you. But I'm just going to tell you what came to me this week. Here's the first one. You never experience grace until you trust somebody beside yourself. You're not going to sit in a cave all alone and somehow grace is just going to be plopped. But it's always going to be through somebody. You never experience grace until you trust somebody beside yourself. That was my issue my whole life. I don't trust anybody but me. I'm the only person I trust. And I did a terrible job at handling my life, but I still said I was the only one I trusted. That's insane. But all of a sudden, no, not all of a sudden, slowly when I started coming to CR and then we became Pathway, I started to trust other people. And that's when the magic started to take place in me. That's when grace started to work in me. So you never experience grace until you trust someone beside yourself. Here's the second one. You never find freedom and healing until you tell someone else your secrets. The old saying is so true, you're only as sick as your secrets. You're only as sick as your secrets. Secrets will eat you up from the inside out. They will kill you. From the inside out. And we have somebody, we don't have to stand up here and do our dirty laundry. But we have to find somebody we trust and say, I've got to tell you the parts of my story that I've never told anybody else. I've got to tell you this. Those of you who've been through groups and done your step five, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know what happens. You're scared to death. And you start into your story and you think, they'll never speak to me again. They will divorce me as a friend. I can forget this friendship. And it goes just the opposite. You get to the end of your story. You're embraced. Thank you for trusting me enough to share your secrets with me. I've never heard of a single step five going bad here. Maybe they do somewhere else. Maybe they do. But I've never heard of a single one going bad here. Here's the third thing. You never discover hope until you link arms with those around you. I really liked what Nami said tonight about resolutions. It doesn't really matter whether we get them right or not. You know, you can make them and fail. So what? So what? We can kind of chuckle at each other. We're a bunch of losers. We're a bunch of jerks. We're broken. What did Riah say today about broken crowns? They steal color. I love that. I thought, I'm going to steal that and put that in a book someday. Either that or she needs to write her own book. Did you catch that? Even broken crayons steal color. I love it. But we're broken. Broken crayons. Sorry, I'm talking Southern. We're broken. We're cracked. We're losers. We're jerks. That's just who we are. And, you know, in the big church, they're not quite good yet with standing in front of a group of people and saying, this is who I am. They're getting good at it. The whole church is changing and getting better and better at this. But the secret we know is you don't stand out all in a field all by yourself and say to nobody, I'm a loser, I'm broken, I'm wounded, I'm damaged, blah, blah, blah. You say it in a group of people who then say, here, take my arm. Take my arm. I'm broken too. I'm wounded too. And so together, we can move forward. Together we can take this, we call it pathway. Together we can take this pathway, you know. So as we face 2019, we don't face it slick and pretty. We don't face it with, ooh, boy, we're going to kill this year. We face it realistically thinking some of us are going to fall into have huge disappointments. We may have relationships that go bad or bad relationships that go worse. I don't know. But the good thing is that none of us have to face this alone. None of us have to face it in a cave feeling sorry for ourselves, you know, thinking nobody cares, I'm worthless, I'm no good. We face it saying, you know what, I'm just a phone call away, a text away, a conversation away from two or three people who will say, let me link arms with you. I'll walk with you. I'll sit with you if you need me to sit with you. I'll just be with you as we move along. What's really cool, and this is just part of why I think, this is part of why I giggle sometimes about what's happening in Pathway. What's so cool is we know this here. There's nobody disagree with us here. We know this because we know it experientially. It's working for us. But what's so cool is it's infiltrating the 9:30 service. It's infiltrating the 11 o'clock service. It's all over the place out at Greenwood, both services. This is just sneaking into the DNA of a pretty good-sized church in Bowling Green, Kentucky. This is not just a little small church. This is a pretty good-sized church. And it's transforming everything in the staff. I've been on staff, I don't know how many years now, but the staff is markedly different now than it was several years ago. I mean, there's a huge difference in just the way we relate to each other and the way we handle day-to-day, you know? It's I see it everywhere, and I'm just snickering. I'm just giggling and thinking, little old Pathway that's stuck in an inconvenient time, you know? We're in a cul-de-sac. We're not on Main Street in the church. We're stuck in a cul-de-sac, saying our dirty words from time to time and, you know, just being who we are, being honest, and having our little groups covertly on Thursday nights and whatever night. We're just doing our little thing, and we're just like what Jesus said, we're the yeast in a lump of dough. Nobody sees it happening, but you come back later and that lump's bigger than it was. What's going on? And I'm just snickering, saying, I ain't telling. Now, I'm not going to say what this is, but we know what it is. It's authenticity followed by love and acceptance. If I tell my secret, you'll hate me. Not here. If I tell you my secret, you'll love me. That's the difference. Pretty cool. Well, that's all I have. Mr. Nami, it's all yours.
We're going to receive an offering, and all funds received will stay in Pathway. Steve, can you...